Isn't it lucky for us, Clay, with our parallel recordings of Star Trek Picard Season 3 and Deadwood, that we're dealing with cocksuckers and dipshits from Chicago, just all over the place. You got Al on one hand, and you've got Liam Shaw. I think his name is Liam, but something like that. But he's a dipshit, and Al calls people cocksuckers. So it's a crossover that we've all been waiting for.
I'll tell you, I'm more okay with Picard's language getting salty in his old age than I think I am with anybody else. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother me as much to hear him call him a dipshit and then say, I can't remember what he says, fucking something later on. I can't remember what he says.
Picard does to Shaw, or Shaw says?
Picard says, not to Shaw, but in some other scene, I think at the bar, he says something, fucking blah, blah. I can't remember what the word is.
I mean, when he's talking about heading out to fuck those two ladies on his date? Yeah.
Terry, this is Sir Patrick. I know you're new here, but Alex assured me that every season I would get to have sex with at least two women.
Hello. This is...
They told me that the de-aging technology was good enough.
This is no-win scenario, if you're American and you don't speak the Queen's English or the King's English. This is the fourth episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard, 9th of March, 2023. It came out, written by Terry Metalis and Sean Trata, directed by Jonathan Frakes, in Universe State 78183.10. Picard says 0.10, which I thought was bizarre. Did you notice that?
I noticed that he said it, but I have... Guys... here's a little fact. Mm-hmm. How long have we been doing the show?
12 years.
7 years? Yeah. 12 years. I have no idea how the star dates work, and I've never known, and I don't really know why that would be weird. But I did notice that he said 0.10. I don't know why that's unique.
I don't know how star date works either, but I think the cadence is to always say 183.10. You know, you don't say 10 in that moment. It just struck me as I've never heard it said that way.
It's like how everybody tried to make 2003 happen, but nobody went for it.
Right.
So
exactly.
Like the aughts were just 2003 through 2009. It wasn't 2003.
I feel like they're changing things. They're changing things on us. This is no win scenario. In this one, with time running out, Picard, Riker, and the crew must confront the sins of their past and heal fresh wounds, while the Titan, dead in water, drifts helplessly towards certain destruction within a mysterious space anomaly. And I realize, Clay, because I don't read the little blurbs, they do, Memory Alpha does just copy the blurb from Paramount Plus. That is what happens.
Oh, okay.
So that's why they're dramatic sounding.
Sure.
No win scenario. It's our fourth episode. I don't know. I enjoyed this one, I think. Mm-hmm. It had a certain like movie action quality to it that I thought maintained energy the whole way through. I thought there were moments of genuinely feeling like it was a TNG reunion show in some ways. Mm-hmm. It still has weird things about it. Like this is, it's weird. This is definitely the best Picard season that they've done so far. Clearly.
I mean, yes. Like, that's not, I mean, while meaning that as a compliment, it is, you know, damning with faint praise, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I would even go so far as to say that I enjoyed this episode.
I thought it was great. Yeah.
Yeah, would you say it was great? Like, that's what, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, it's great for Picard, I think.
Yes, yeah.
I thought it was largely a very competently done action episode of Star Trek. And I'll have other things that I think are weird about it, but like my general perception or my general first takeaway was like I didn't think that was half bad. I watched it and I didn't have too many complaints. It kept my attention the whole way through. There were some strange moments, but otherwise it was, you know, largely a positive experience, I guess.
Yeah, I came up with a few thoughts. The first one is I think what I said in episode 2, this episode sort of I don't want to say it, it didn't prove me right, but my gut that I felt about episode two kind of felt like it paid off here, where episode two very much felt like it was just a transitional episode of a larger piece.
Yeah.
And I think by the time you get to this episode, by the end of this episode, you kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, these four episodes are essentially like a movie. This is like Zack Snyder's Justice League, but Star Trek, where they've taken a four-hour movie and cut it into hour-long pieces.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it as a whole, a lot of the stuff they did before that feels like moving pieces weren't really moving, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, makes a lot more sense. I don't think it's perfect, but I do think if it is going to be more vignette-y like this, there's another word for it, I can't remember what it is, but if they are going to have beats along the way that feel like, oh, we have ended this story, this chunk of the story, I think that is only going to benefit the show. Because when you get to this episode, it feels like they've paid off a lot of stuff they set up over the last three episodes, character-wise and action-wise. And it doesn't feel like they're just stringing you along for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, like this, I don't feel like in any other season, I feel like we would have gotten 9 episodes of Riker and Picard being shitty to each other before they finally come back around in the last episode. Whereas I don't feel like that's going to happen again, at least not the way it happens here. You know what I mean? So it feels, this episode, I think, made me feel a bit more generous towards the three that came before it, because you can see the whole piece now.
Yeah.
I still think within that piece, there are some things that are not totally preferred. For instance, I mean, this is just a one off the top of my head, but if a big plot point of your show in your episode is going to be that there's no power on the ship and it's really dark on the ship, don't have the ship be dark when the power's on.
Sure.
This is the ship is so dark. Like, make it a little brighter. So when the power goes off, it feels like the power went off. Anyway,
that's true.
You know, I think it's overall, it's a good, they managed to tell a four episode story and kind of end that story, or at least that piece of the story, in a pretty satisfying way. I think if you pulled the Rafi stuff out of the first three episodes and just, it would probably cut this down to maybe like a 2.5 hour movie or something.
Yeah.
I think that would be a pretty solid Star Trek movie, all things considered.
Yeah. I agree that I think that the season is at least semi-structured in a way that it doesn't feel like it's just flying by the seat of its pants like the prior seasons did. So there does seem to be the potential that, like, we're always on guard just saying, like, I wonder if this is going to pay off or if this is going to do anything. And I think that it mostly does. Like, I guess that my the things that I like about it are the scene where Riker is talking to Crusher, Picard, and I think Jack in like his ready room or something felt very much like those characters talking to each other in a way that the show hasn't done to this point, I don't think.
I was a little worried by that scene, because I feel like the thing that has tripped us up in previous episodes, not just in this season, but in previous seasons, is that they sacrifice these characters and their relationships for the conflict they need in that moment.
Yeah.
And so I was worried when Riker was coming out against what they were proposing so hard. I was like, I mean, is this really what he would do? I feel like he would be the one who would kind of be like, yeah, let's do it, let's try anything. But then I remembered the message, and I was like, okay, his standpoint is, if we blow up, I will never get to talk to Deanna again.
Yeah.
And so he's weighing that thing, which is making him more negative. And I was like, okay, I buy this. Mm-hmm. And once I bought that, I was like, yeah, this is great. It's four people discussing a Star Trek problem and figuring out how to solve it with Star Trek means. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like the actors fell into their rhythms a little bit more. And it felt appropriate in a lot of ways. I like the I generally like the action sequence of it. Mm-hmm. Like I like the sort of the flow. I like little bits of all the moments, really. The thing that I like the way that they're playing the changelings here, which is not mm-hmm. really all that different than they've ever played the changelings. It's hard because I don't want to just immediately complain, but like there are also problems with the changeling, the way that the changeling is done, that I think like it could have been improved in some ways, but I don't really get into that at this point. But what I like about it is just it felt competent. It felt like there was something going on. All of the beats moving to the next beat felt like they belonged in that kind of order, and they, you know, they solved the problem by the end of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it was all satisfying. I'm looking for the point where I can start to say what I didn't like about it. But I think you get to a point where my big takeaway from it was, outside of the usual concerns that we've had, I really started wondering about whether or not this franchise or this show, like the TNG show, is equipped to talk about the problems that they want the characters to talk about.
Okay.
So I think that, like, on a structural level, everything works for me here, but I have almost no emotional connection with any problem that any of the characters are having on an interpersonal character level with each other. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. and I think a good example of that is like why this maybe doesn't actually work for the franchise is like when Shaw comes into the holodeck and starts yelling at Picard about being a Borg.
Yeah. How did he get in there, by the way? He came in from like the opposite side of the room.
You can open that arch anywhere you want. The room is just spinning around you.
Yes, yeah.
If he lets all the other cadets in and everything. It's convenient that the holodeck is allowed to work when the ship is completely dead for whatever reason.
I know that they explained that, but while they were going through all these things, I'm thinking like, why can't they just use this independent holodeck source to power the ship?
That's my thing. It's like being like in a car that's broken down and you're like, well, this other car battery that I have is good to like use my phone or something. It's like, well, you could just put it in your car, I think.
It's like, yeah, I have this car battery. I have another one, but it's only for emergency. It's like, okay, what would you call this?
Right. And you're using it to like check Twitter or something. You're like, right, well, what's going on?
I feel like it's a catch-22 for them though, because obviously as soon as they walked into the holodeck, the only thing I could think of is, why does the holodeck work? And right. Riker was like, maybe we shut down life support every 10 minutes for 5 minutes.
You get everyone to huddle together in one room. And
everybody hold their breath for 3 minutes while we can save some power. But so then, of course, they have to say, oh, the holodeck works on an independent power source. It's like, oh, okay. But then they're still having this power source problem. And all I can keep thinking is, why can't they just use the holodeck power source? So it's like, I know that they have to address it in order to use the holodeck here, but almost by addressing it, it makes it even stand out even more.
But why use the holodeck? Why bother with the holodeck?
Yeah, I mean, if you're telling me the Titan doesn't have a bar,
right? They must have like a 10-4 version of itself, and it just struck me because when Picard walks in, he's like, this place is very dear to me. And it's like,
well, I can tell you why. It's because they'd have to build it and they already have the set for 10 forward.
You know? Yeah, sure.
Which I did want to, I don't know if you remember this. I was under the impression that in season 2 of Picard, he hadn't seen Guinan in a very long time. Is that not the case?
You mean old like Whoopi Goldberg guy?
Yeah, like current day Whoopi Goldberg. Is that not the case? Was he like?
Well, they greet each other like they haven't seen each other in a while. Okay. I don't think.
I was gonna go back and try to look, but I couldn't bring myself to even scrub through season 2 to figure out. But for some reason, in the back of my head, I was like, I thought him going to 10-4 that first time was like a big deal because they hadn't seen each other in a long time.
That would have been my memory too, but I don't know if they're retconning that or if we're just misremembering what they talked about when they saw each other.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been up to 5 years, right? Because that flashback they did was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Who knows?
So outside of the weirdness of my problem with the holodeck is that they had that conversation that they could have had that anywhere, really, like the galley, if you're just going to drink or whatever.
If they really wanted to impress me, they would have dug up the set for Che Fook from Voyager.
Yes, yeah, just did that, or it keeps like flickering in, and Picard has to like punch hammers the table to make it come back in
and they come over to the bar to get a whiskey, and then fake Kramer comes over with his pool cue and is like, "Who's this nobody you got here, Picard?"
Lacutus, who's this guy? The franchise sits in this weird space where the Battle of Wolf 359 is very cool and it's very important and it's vital for Picard's character. When you have a character getting very serious about it, it becomes semi-cartoonish to me in some ways. He's like, when he has that line, he's like, "You were the baddest Borg. They gave you a name because you were so bad." And it's like, what the fuck? This is
They wrote silly. A whole Shaft-style song about you.
Shaw is one of those examples. Other examples are, I'm reading, A Heart That Works, which is Rob Delaney's book that he wrote last year, which is about he had a small child, like a 2-year-old who died of brain cancer. And I just don't, like, the show feels like it's written by people who have never actually experienced the thing that they're writing about, unfortunately. So, and I wonder if that's just the tone of the franchise, that it can't handle serious conversations like that. And so,
the Borg have not attacked yet, so that would be a tough one to actually experience and then write about, I guess. But
I'm even moving on to like Jack and Picard. No, I guess the Borg would definitely be a more difficult scenario to wrap your head around, I suppose.
Write what you know, and no one has gone to warp speed yet, is what I'm saying.
Well, when we see the documentary Blu-ray special, all the writers will have mechanical arms and be like, "Well, we had to experience what it's like to be turned into a Borg." I just feel that when the show or the franchise or whatever, maybe with characters that we already know, tries to do these kinds of storylines, it never actually feels to me like it's happening to the characters, unfortunately. And in contrast to like the action scene, which felt very much like a Star Trek situation, Jack and Picard talking about like Picard, you know, their relationship and things like that, it just doesn't really ring true to me. And it doesn't, not that it doesn't ring true in the sense that it doesn't work in sense of like the context of the script or whatever, but it just doesn't land with me emotionally. It doesn't make me feel anything. I don't feel relief or sadness. I don't feel the deep anger that Shaw feels towards Picard about the Locutus situation and stuff like that. So it feels like actors trying to get through this material that is a little bit divorced from reality. And it just hangs me up on the show. And I think that my biggest problem with the 4 episodes so far is that this would be a very long 4-episode, like a 4-hour movie. And it's actually not really about anything the entire time, is my problem with it. Like, it's not really getting to a core of an interesting problem for me.
Yeah, I think the thing that's too bad is that they get very close to figuring that out.
They do. The ideas are fine, I think. You know, like, you could use them.
I think that they get close to it through Riker, but they don't spend enough time on Riker's, the thing Riker's dealing with, to really make everybody else's thing feel like part of the same piece. Because like I really liked his whole thing in this episode where he was talking about that he ran away because of the death of his child, and all that was darkness, and now he's being sucked into the same void. And then it ends with this beautiful birth of these cool glowy jellyfish. Yeah, I love it. I love that when they do that in Star Trek is when they encounter something like legitimately cosmic and just kind of watch it in awe. I always like
that. It's a callback to Encounter at Farpoint, right?
Oh, is it really?
Those jellyfish creatures, I think.
Oh, so when Picard calls out Farpoint, they're literally just same thing?
Yeah, they're setting the stage for that reference. Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't cut over to him and go, "See, like Farpoint.
I wish Q weren't dead."
Do you remember Q? I miss that guy. But you know, like it has that moment of him seeing something beautiful coming out of the darkness, yep, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
And like that's not really a overarching kind of thing for everybody else. I'm not saying it has to literally be everybody has the same sort of like morbidity about them, but I didn't think it was it wrapped things up as well as it could have.
Specifically because
it's so tied to Riker's thing, and we get so little of Riker's thing across these four episodes because we're dealing with Picard and Beverly and Picard and Jack and at least Shaw and Seven kind of, I think, get about the right amount of play. But I think Riker's attitude towards Picard is very much rooted in the thing that he talks about in this episode when he gets so angry at him. But there's really not a lot of, like, they don't give that storyline enough time for you to really see the development of that and see that change in his demeanor towards Picard in a way that makes sense at the time. Because as you're going through it, Riker's like the levity in this show.
Yeah.
He's like, I kind of left my wife, my son's dead, but you know, it's not a big deal. We're out here. We're having a good time. And then all of a sudden he turns into this like really dark, morose kind of guy just waiting to die. And it's a hard shift that doesn't quite vibe until you get to the end of it. And I found myself thinking, this is actually a really great arc for him, but I wish that they had given it more service earlier on, so it didn't feel so out of left field when he starts acting so strange.
Yeah, I would agree. Do you think it's funny because it's one of the complaints we would probably have in a prior season is that the plot gets in the way of the character development for that stuff, but this one hasn't really had that much plot going on.
No,
you know,
I think it's been all character stuff.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I mean, the biggest plot piece is what do they want with Jack Crusher? And at the end of this one, we still don't know.
No one cares. Yeah.
I mean, even I think that's one of the criticisms I might throw at it is that, well, it's twofold, right? Because I think they show us why they cast Amanda Plummer as this character in one scene in this show, where it's the scene where she, like, apparently she's got a changeling hand or something, or maybe is she a full changeling?
Yeah, I was thinking she's the full changeling was my interpretation of that, but maybe not. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I saw the Red Letter Media guys were speculating that it's just her hand and that the changelings are controlling her, basically, because her demeanor changes so much when she cuts her hand off.
Yep.
But my first instinct was that she was also just a changeling.
Yeah.
But that scene, the way that her total demeanor changes when she's talking to that floating, you know, goop head.
Yeah.
Was like, that's why they cast Amanda Plummer, because she brings more to that performance of that scene than I think a lot of other people would.
Yeah.
She's very, she immediately becomes very fragile and kind of scared in a way that I think does more to set up whatever this changeling bad guy is than any sort of like exposition could do.
Yeah.
That being said, she's still kind of a non-entity for these four episodes in any meaningful way other than just being, she's the ship that's trying to get Jack.
Yes.
So you're asking her to do a lot and giving her not much to do it with. And I think that's probably my biggest complaint across these four is like, I'm happy that they spent so much time on the character stuff. I'd much rather see that stuff anyway. But I think that really highlights why when you're going over to this villain, you got to give them stuff that you can have one scene where you get in and get out and you know what they're about and you know what's going on. So you can focus on this stuff and not have to worry about like, where the fuck is the Shrike?
Right.
Are they out there? Like, what are they coming for? I know they want Jack, but what do they want Jack for? And obviously, why do they want Jack is an overarching thing they're going to be dealing with. But you know what I mean? There needs to be something there for you to care about these guys.
Yeah, agreed.
Honestly, if it was me, I might do one of those changeling scenes earlier.
So in the season, you mean?
Yep. Yeah. So like maybe in the first episode or the second episode when you see her. So you get some sense, even if it's kind of this, you know, Lord Snoke situation. Mm-hmm. You still get to see her, the fear in her, come up.
Yep.
So you go, oh, okay, there's something on the line for her here. So at least you have that much to hook into when you're going through the rest of it. If you're not getting that much time with her.
Yeah, agreed. She's. Really, the only development that she's had as a character is that the ship is supposed to be a walking weapon or whatever, but it doesn't actually seem very effective at being.
I know that's
that.
That's that one scene where she's like, "I have every bomb you've ever heard of, and then some." That was cool, and yep. Then when they get down to it, she's like, "Ah, I mean,
it's whatever.
It's fine, really."
Well, I mean, Riker hits her with a rock to defeat the ship too. It's just like that's what it is. Yeah, I would agree. I think that through the four episodes, it's just been like, if you were to watch it as a single movie, I think you'd probably be struck by how little is actually going on within it.
Sure.
And yeah. I just find it, you know, I think it's a weakness that the show has never, the series has never really figured out how to handle, is to balance episodic stuff, which I don't think that this one is. Like, this is a fairly... strong example of just like a heavily serialized story that's being told. And, yeah. You know, I think that the shows that do that stuff kind of well have really figured out that the chapters kind of need to be distinct. And we bring up Deadwood a lot, but like, if you're unaware, like we're doing the Deadwood podcast, which is called Something Pretty. But Deadwood, I think, does a really good job of the episodes center around a single idea in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. The characters in the story, and there's a lot of them, are positioned into a place where their story, the theme of the episode is reveals something about that character's current story that they're going through. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like the modern Treks do that whatsoever. So
I think a lot of the serialized shows don't do that.
Oh, I would argue, well, I guess I only watch really the good ones, but I would argue the very strong ones tend to do that.
And so, yes, the good ones do, yeah.
And so if you're a weaker show or a show that's trying to be like that, I think it's something that they should focus on, really, because I think that what you end up here is the stories, like, because they don't do that, it's what happens to you is that Riker's story doesn't get enough light shined on it from all angles to really understand how this relates to everything else and why... The Picard story ties in, because the way that they do it here, you'll have a reveal or a character conversation, and then characters will just kind of yell at each other about stuff that you hadn't really even thought of because the show hasn't examined it for any amount of time. So you Picard will get angry at Riker and say it's like because you're a son, and you go, oh, I wasn't even really thinking about that because they haven't laid the groundwork for it. But that would be something that I wish that they had done, because I think it would have drastically improved it to just have various ideas be much more well explored across this four episode sequence when honestly the characters are just on this ship for 4 hours. And I'm not sure why you wouldn't do that otherwise.
Yeah. I think a lot of the other shows, when you run into a streaming show that is very serialized and you find yourself up in the midway point, getting really bored and feeling like it's all filler, that's because they're not doing exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, they're focusing on the episode-to-episode story, and they're not focusing on what they're doing with your characters. Like, why are they telling this exact story at this time? You know, what's the point? And I do think that can be something that the Star Trek shows have a tough time doing. I think Strange New World kind of gets around it a bit because it's episodic, so you kind of by nature have to do that.
Yeah, I think that's why Strange New World works the best too, because it doesn't abandon that. And that brings it back to I just wonder if TNG is a show that is capable of doing that kind of storytelling, because I don't know if, you know, just for as much as I like the sequences of like you know, when Picard assumes command in this episode, even though he sounds feeble still, it's still like a nice little like, oh, he's like flying a ship again or whatever and stuff like that. Or
it does kind of feel like in a movie when they do the joke shot of like grandpa behind the wheel of the Dodge Charger and he's flipping the glasses down.
It does. So we're a little bit too late to have it match the zing that I think you'd want it to, but you know, that's just the way that the show was produced. But I think that those moments are buttressed by character stuff that just doesn't feel like these characters have ever really gone through or had conversations like this before. So it feels a little bit off-putting.
And you know, there's so much stuff going on too, that things, when you spread these things out across four episodes, you kind of forget about them, like you were saying. For instance, the Seven of Nine stuff with her and Shaw. The payoff of how she figures out that LaForge is a changeling by her saying Commander Hansen instead of Seven, and then her making it a point to the captain that, you know, her friends call her Seven or whatever.
Yeah.
Is paying off the fact that Shaw only refers to her as Hansen.
Yeah, it's and his they mentioned racism it. In the first episode. Yeah,
and they mentioned it in like the first episode. She's like, he would prefer that I use my human name. And then it never comes up, and it's not even really a point of contention until that last minute. So it feels like, okay, yes, this is a good moment that is paying off this thing off, but it's not like we've really been spending a lot of time with this. You know, I feel like
it's a good example.
The disconnect and the conflict between Shaw and Seven had way more things to do with than what he calls her on a day-to-day basis. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That's the Star Trek-y problem, I think, is that like, so they're adding drama between those two by relying on a kind of Borg racism, but it doesn't seem to ever get deeper than that. And it's so infrequently discussed. Like, if you were to describe Shaw, I wouldn't say his defining characteristic is a sort of racism towards Borg, you know, across four episodes.
Right.
But
yes,
that's the one character trait that they're like, he's going to have this problem with Seven. And so my issue with it is that that feels very much descriptive of what the problem that I have with a lot of the character interpersonal issues is that it feels slightly tacked on, and not that it's actually grounded in any kind of real problem that the characters have with each other. So when they talk about it in these very dramatic ways, I'm kind of sitting there going like, I don't really buy this. I don't think like this guy needs a better reason to get to disagree with Seven than just the fact that he doesn't like the Borg. And then you have to have him do that awkward scene where he's like, I know you're Locutus and stuff like that. And I wish you didn't have to go to that level.
You know, the Wolf 5359, every time I want to say 3579 because it's just missing
just numbers, just the odd numbers of the alphabet or whatever you want to call it.
I kind of wish Picard had stood up for himself finally and just turned to Shaw and been like, you think I wanted to do that?
He's never brought that up with anybody.
You know, it's like I can understand the hesitation from the Borg in general because of how dangerous they are. But I've never totally been on board with this idea that you can blame Picard or even Seven for anything that they did as a Borg.
Right.
By definition, they're not acting under their own will.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's like blaming a hostage for a terrorist attack.
Yes, or the I guess that would be the, what was those, there was that famous woman hostage who was taken by like Weather Underground.
Oh, Patty Hearst.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
it's not like they captured Picard and then turned him into Locutus and they were like, we are going to let you go. And he's like, actually, let's go kill a bunch of people. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah. And that's the drama there to mine is that he feels bad that he was unable to resist them. But you would think that eventually he has to get to a point where he just says like, it's a deep regret, but I'm, you know, sort of bad. We've mentioned it before. It's like the only defining weakness of Picard's career that you can go to. Yeah. So it's like you have to hit it over and over again. But I was comparing it with
I kind of wish he had been like, my wife lived on Romulus and when it blew up or something, you know?
Right, yeah.
Something a little bit more that he was a little, well, I mean, I guess he wasn't really directly involved in that, but whatever his connection to that was.
I think it's just, you know, I don't know if I feel like I'm hung up on it, but it's a tone difference. So like when Shaw was having that sequence with Picard, I'm sure a lot of people who are familiar with the franchise, I flash back to Sisko meets Picard in the Emissary pilot.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that the difference there is kind of profound, which is that Shaw gets a little histrionic about things. Like the drama of this modern show requires that he blow it up a little bit. But it made me just think and really respect the fact that Sisko meets Picard and the resentment is just underneath him, really. Mm-hmm. And it's almost more cutting what Sisko does to him than what Shaw does, because Shaw's scene is a little bit over the top and it's like not particularly helpful. And Sisko is more, I'm supposed to meet with you and let me explain to you before we start talking, let me explain to you how I feel about you. And now you talk, right? And it's like,
yeah, yeah.
There's something there.
In Deep Space Nine, it happened like 6 weeks ago.
Right. So. It's fresh. It's like he's still grieving his dead wife. It wasn't 30 years later.
Yeah, but like people weren't totally sure, I'm sure, at that point, what happened, how he was involved, why he's okay now.
Right.
I'm sure there's a little bit more gray area going on there where Sisko can be pissed off at him versus 30 years later when, I mean, I understand. So I get the Shaw's trauma. I don't have a problem with. I don't really have a problem with any of it because, you know, whatever. It makes as much sense as anything else.
Sure.
It's a classic TNG thing to go back to. Fine, maybe a little cliche, but it makes sense for why he's acting the way he's acting.
Do you think it makes sense for Shaw? I guess I don't know if that's preempting your point, but is this a necessary problem for Shaw to have with Picard? Couldn't have gone in a different direction. That's a little bit more. Like, I much prefer the "you hijacked my ship" argument from Shaw.
Sure, but I mean, I guess they have to justify, I guess, why he's shitty to him as soon as he gets on the ship. But even so, I mean, I guess they don't really, because I mean, he's still trying.
He knows
up.
That they're trying to steal the ship. I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Maybe you don't need it.
I'm not really sure. I just don't think they had a good reason to keep Shaw pissed off for four episodes. Really, like it feels like he has to be, but once he's injured and hands over command, it seems like he's a little bit pouty in these sequences. Like he's just sitting in his room waiting for things.
So I think you could do it. I think you could have him have this Wolf 359 backstory where he talks about the trauma that he suffered because of the event, but doesn't specifically blame Picard for it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So he's getting across to Picard the thing that has ruined, you know, has given him this PTSD for 30 years, while also kind of understanding that he wasn't directly responsible.
Yeah.
So, which I think probably would be more
analogous to Riker, I think, too.
Yeah. And it'd be a bit more effective dramatically because instead of maybe it would be too close to what they do with Sisko, I don't know, but it gives you that room where he can have this issue that is linked to Picard, express it without directly being like, that's why I fucking hate this guy.
Right.
But and Picard can still be affected by it because he knows that the reason that this happened to this guy is because of him.
Yeah. Yeah,
if that makes sense, that's a lot of
No, it does.
And
I because I
stuff.
I wish that they like going back to the theme of the episode. Like you could tie that more closely to Riker, I think, Riker, there's a sort of the feeling of powerlessness seems to be the guiding trauma, for lack of a better word, like characters who are unable to prevent something from happening, and it even kind of relates to Jack and Picard, really. Like you were unable to prevent life from going the way that it went because of things outside of your control that happened. Mm-hmm. And so I would agree that I think that Shaw would bear that a little bit better.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was trying to think of how to tie seven into it. Ultimately, it comes down to seven. I wouldn't even have seven in the season. I'm not exactly sure why she's here, but.
Well, what I was going to say was I understand why Shaw, with that background, would be wary and distrustful of seven, and why people, Starfleet people in general, would be wary and distrustful of seven, because she still is where features Borg-related technology.
Yeah.
So I can understand in the sort of, you know, post 9/11 kind of way where anyone that with darker colored skin, you can't, people would give like a second look on the train or whatever.
Yeah.
Never knowing whether or not she was still a Borg or what was going on with her. Could she be activated? Were they bringing a suicide bomber under their ship?
Yeah.
I can understand that aspect. So I almost feel like it would be more effective from a character standpoint and whatnot to have him express that backstory and sort of maybe kind of turn it more towards why he doesn't like Seven, and then have Picard be the one to use his own experience being Locutus to be like, listen, that's not the way it is. Some Picard words of wisdom that start to point Shaw in the right direction as far as why he should trust her. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Instead of it just being all about this fucking guy killed my ship. That's why I don't like him now, even though it was 30 years ago and he's been fine.
Yeah. Well, I think that Picard's struggle as Locutus ties into the other struggles in a way, which is that as a Locutus, he was powerless to stop what happened to him. So I think that you have to link that to Shaw's feeling of helplessness and Riker's feeling of helplessness too.
Yeah.
And
I should have used that example from after 9/11 when they wouldn't let them build a mosque within like 5 miles of Ground Zero for some reason.
Site. Well, and poor timing to sort of pitch that plan.
Sure, but still, I mean, does timing really matter? Because I mean, it's not like they're building an atomic bomb, you know? It's just a house of worship.
It's
kind of what I'm talking about. That sort of reticence, warranted or very much not warranted.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sort of just thinking about whether or not the show does this well. Because I think it's all there. It's just a weird example of, I don't know, there's a real art to doing things in a way that you make sure that the connections are felt without it being overtly, this is the connections that we're making here.
Yeah.
And I think that just the shows that do it better or the shows that do it very well are very strong at doing that. They will remind you enough of what is going on with the characters that things don't sort of pop up as and feel like they're just kind of coming up out of nowhere, really. Like I think it's just Shaw coming in and talking about the Locutus thing. It's just like, you know, we haven't talked about this in a couple episodes, and I wish that the show had just done a better job of like reminding me where this guy's headspace was before he comes in and starts yelling about stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
And I would have appreciated that, but it's weird because there's no plus. The Changeling is also kind of a strange example of that, which is that the Changeling is doing on the ship Changeling things that DS9 has established that the Changelings do and that they make sense to be able to do. But it's not really interested in expanding that or bringing it to a new place. And so I'm left wondering, like, what the fuck is the Changeling doing 99% of this time?
I was thinking that too. I was, because they kind of call out the fact that, I mean, the Shrike lost basically because they were supposed to get Jack and now they're getting sucked into this black hole.
Yeah.
So what is the end game for the Changeling now? I mean, the Changeling caused them to get sucked into this black hole. Are they just going around doing their engineering work?
Right.
That the guy that they killed was supposed to be doing, or
right. They kept up appearances as that guy that he took the body of. Yeah, it's because it's I just feel that the Changelings are so powerful that I would have expected even more problems from one being on board.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's,
yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
So it's like, what
also,
do you
also because at the end, right, when they're trying to fix the thing, they're trying to fix the ship, and then the changeling comes in to stop them from fixing the ship. It's like, dude, if you stop, the ship's gonna blow up. Are you trying to capture Jack Crusher alive, or are you trying to kill him?
Oh, I see. From the changeling's point of view, you mean, yeah, what's going on?
Because if you're trying to kill him, then okay, I understand why you would stop Shaw and Seven from juicing up the nacelles.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to catch him, you would think, yes, let's get out of this gravity well that's going to kill us.
Right. Let me help you if you need a spare set of hands. Yeah. So that's all right. What do you think of the changeling effect?
I thought it looked a lot better in this episode than it did previously. It's really pretty. It's pretty gross. I like it.
It is gross. I was wondering if it there was some, I don't know if it was Trek or something, or something was talking about, like, wondering whether or not it's an updated effect or if it's a different version of the changelings. I'm assuming it's just an updated effect.
Yeah, I think it's probably just probably the same reason why the Ferengi have tighter heads,
smaller ears. Yeah, they look like little pizza monsters now. The changelings look like, if the cheese falls off the top of your pizza, that's what
Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs.
Yeah, same thing. So what if
Shaw in the bar goes into the Wolf 359 thing, right? And then he's like, he doesn't direct it towards, like, Picard sees it coming, right? He's like, okay, I understand.
He knows that look in the eye when someone's about to bring up Wolf 359.
But when he gets through the end of it, instead of directly blaming him because he was Locutus, he's like, and this motherfucker had a Borg assigned to my ship. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, whoa, oh, you're talking about Seven? He's like, yeah, I'm talking about Seven. Now I have a second in command who, every time I look at her, all I can see are my dead friends from 30 years ago. And then what else did you do? Then you came onto my ship and you stole it.
Yeah.
And you drove us out to this place, and now we're in a gravity well, and it's all your fault, motherfucker. Like, I feel like that's the way to do it, instead of just going into the same old, but...
Agreed.
Anyway.
Shaw is interesting to me because I think Shaw could have been a really great character. He's not there for me, unfortunately, because he doesn't connect to these dots effectively. I find him to be a little bit of a schizophrenic character, really.
Mm-hmm.
He typically does an action that requires the plot. Do it. Like, you know, he took a shot to the leg and is like, Riker, you're in command now, asshole. And he just goes off to sick bay. I wasn't crazy about that, but I feel that he's... he could have been a really neat linchpin character that was both an antagonist and a friend across a bunch of episodes.
You think he's done?
No, I think he's going to join them. The Titan is, he's going to like fully embrace them and go off with the Titan to do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah. Do you think that leaves it open for him to become more of that character you're talking about? Or do you think it's...
No, he missed the first step. Yeah. Like, I think he's just going to be on their side now. So there's nothing left to be interesting about him.
I'm honestly, the biggest shock to me is that he made it out alive. Like, he's the perfect kind of character who ends up dying in this story.
Yeah. I would agree with that. The fuck else? Was there anything else, really? I thought I had something to say about the ship. I guess I don't.
I love that ship, man. I really like it.
The Titan.
Yeah.
It does look neat. I liked all the effects. I like the sequence of getting out. The jellyfish were fun. It's a nice callback, and it matches what the episode is about.
I wish that they hadn't... You know, we were complaining a couple episodes about how on the nose they were when she threw the ship at him.
Yeah.
Where Beverly is like, did she just throw a ship? Or Picard's like, did she just throw a ship at us? And they kind of close that loop here when he throws the asteroid at her.
Yeah.
By also having Beverly go, did you just throw an asteroid at her? I mind the asteroid bit less.
Yeah.
But I did like that sequence in general, because it showed Riker kind of coming back to normal.
Yep.
And getting some of that old Riker zip back where he's being a little playful with things by throwing a fucking rock at the other ship. You know, so I really like that bit when he throws the asteroid at her.
I like it. It's the thing I've talked about in the past Voyager episodes where the once the ships moved away from the models and they became CGI, they become a little bit too bumper carsy for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Nemesis has the great action sequence of the Enterprise just collides with the Romulan ship and like, you know, crashes into it and like cuts it in half and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I guess my question is how the technology of shields work. Like they just, if a rock hits you and your shields are up, it just sends you shooting off like a billiard ball off in the other direction.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that again. Like, it's the same kind of thing as when they detonate the torpedo and all of a sudden it
flies away at that
point. Yeah, she just blasts off the side of the screen because they need her to.
But when it got hit with the rock, it was like, oh, I didn't realize they were going to destroy the Shrike at this point. But no, it just turns around and it's like, I'm going to chase them once our engines are back online.
The other thing that I kind of wish they had done was, I like the bit where Picard is piloting the ship through the asteroids.
Yeah.
But then as soon as the wave hits them, they completely forget about that thing. And so now it's, I guess, smooth sailing, straight shot.
Yes.
Once they get hit by the wave.
Yeah.
The birth
metaphor.
Yeah. It was just one of those things where it was like, okay, they made it through that level of the game.
Yeah.
And now that's just that obstacle is gone now.
Yep. Got to fight the boss.
I wish what they had done just for the sake of not having it seem so contrived isn't the word, but artificially put there to be an issue.
Yep.
I wish they had just had Riker, once they hit the wave and the power comes back on, I just wish Riker had just been like, shields up, and that's it. So then, okay, now everything that hits him just bounce off.
Yep. we'll show exactly, if you've missed that, we'll show you when we hit the Shrike with the rock, what exactly happens.
Yes.
So I guess the final big plot point, like what do you, it's so central and we've kind of danced around it. Like, what do you think of the Jack and Picard relationship, and including the flashback when he's like, I fucking hate kids, I'm glad to not have a family, and he heads off. My main qualm is like storytelling is that I wish the show had a little bit more faith where the audience doesn't have to recognize or be shown that Picard is remembering this interaction from 20 years ago
or whatever it was.
There's no reason Picard should remember that was Jack who asked him that question.
Yeah. What I kind of wish they had done is I kind of wish they had opened the season with that scene, like the full scene.
Before you met him.
From Picard's point of view, and you don't show who Jack is at that moment.
Yeah.
And then you come back around to it, and then you show that it was Jack who asked the question, you know?
Yeah.
Because I actually did like the flashback, because that end bit, I thought was really well played and especially well acted by Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Because Jack is there, obviously, because he knows this is his dad. He's asking him that question. But Picard, Patrick Stewart does this great thing where he gets that answer and he considers it. And then he remembers, I'm basically just a crowd pleaser right now, so I got to give the crowd pleasing answer of, I don't need a family, I have Starfleet. And everybody claps and shit.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize he's breaking this kid's heart. And I actually thought it was a really nice scene, a well-played scene. But yeah, when they cut back to the two of them and they're staring at each other like they're both remembering this at exactly the same time, it was a bit much.
It's the, have you ever heard the How Did This Get Made episode for 88 Minutes, the Pacino movie?
Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a scene in 88 Minutes, I guess, where it's like, a lot of movies do this, but like the character is like, oh my God, I remember what happened. And in his mind, you go back to the flashback and he remembers something that's happening behind him in the flashback that he has no ability that he would actually see what was going on. It's not quite that bad, but it's just you just don't remember Jack was that person, you know, guy with a baseball hat that you paid no extra special attention to was him or whatever.
I did remember the way he said, "Oi, Gav," before he asked my question. It was very similar to the way that this young man says it.
What do you think of J. Jack and Picard in general, I guess. I'm glad they brought up the fact that he's named Jack after her first husband,
right?
Because that was becoming awkward.
I would have named you the same thing because that was a hell of a foursome we had that night.
I think obviously they're leaving room to develop it, right? Through the rest of the season.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like the scene with them at the bar didn't land for me, mainly because it felt very much like it was supposed to be a scene where they talk about stuff, but it was very much a scene that they just sort of kicked the can a bit
more. Yeah, they get to know each other, kind of wasting time getting to know. It's tough.
Which, yeah, it's because I understand the value of that.
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's a tough call because they're kicking the can a bit, but that scene where they're kind of like joking and connecting is nice.
Yep.
Although I did think it was really funny. The Picard's escalation of questions was hilarious. When they sit down and he's like, "So, would you like to tell me about your life?" And he's like, "Ah, not really." And he goes, "Okay, that's fine. Why didn't you want to come meet me?" He's like, "Whoa." Yikes.
We get right into it. Hop right into it.
So yeah, I don't know. I
like the scene in general. I am very glad that they got rid of Jack's resentment towards him and didn't have it be a thing.
Yes. Yeah.
That's refreshing, I think. They were setting it up that way.
Yeah.
I kind of agree. It comes back to my main problem earlier, which is just that I don't think that they just haven't had a chance to really connect with each other in a way that the scene feels like it can be about anything.
Right.
Yeah. And it just comes down to, I don't think that the writing staff is drawing an experience here where even if they don't have this exact experience,
they all come from healthy families.
Yeah. Or like just like no one has a kid that they didn't have for 20 years. Like that's my problem about it. Like that I mentioned before, no one pushed back on it, but it's just the experience of someone who does not have kids having the kid is a drastic experience only when the child is born and you're aware of it, right? So like it's different for women because women deal with the pregnancy and everything. Mm-hmm. But just for me, subjectively, like even when Amy was pregnant the first time, it kind of felt like nothing's really going to happen here. Like, this is a weird process, but like you.
I didn't have to do anything, so I didn't feel like anything happened.
But you have the.
Call me when it's out, honey.
Everything changes the second in the operating room or the room when they're born, the birth room when they're born.
Sure.
And they come out and you're like, oh my God, there's like a person here now. Like, what a strange thing. And I remember that being a very big change. And so my problem with the Picard thing, and it feels like the writers recognize that this would be an interesting narrative, but it just doesn't feel like it lands for me because the person who's not had the kid meeting a grown child 25 years later is a very awkward emotional thing, I think. Like, mm-hmm. It's much more awkward than they're giving it credit here, because I think that Picard would be more bound up in the what does it mean for, like, how should I be a father now, and less mm-hmm. about the regret of I've missed these years with you, you know? So I don't
see why you can't have both. Cause I mean, I think those are both very natural things to think, you know? Cause as he gets into with that argument with Beverly, he never had the chance to be a father,
yep.
You know? And so I can understand him feeling remorse for not getting that time. Absolutely. I mean, I think if I found out tomorrow I had a 15, 20 year old son, I would definitely feel like, oh, I wish I had known.
Yep. But I think there's a whole, I think it's just kind of cheating. It's a cheat in the sense that they, or skipping to the like analysis of it or the Picard's outlook on it that I feel skips the beat of like recognizing the emotion itself. So like, okay. I guess that my, it fits into what I was talking about before of just like, it doesn't feel like the writers have any lived experience about this. And so there's no interesting like core emotional thing that I can connect to with it. And like, you know, just to bring up the Delaney thing, like your kid dying is obviously a terrible, horrible thing, but there's like insights from knowing what it is that you as someone making it up who's never experienced it would never be able to write that situation, you know, because
sure.
you don't understand the strange thing that you found funny as your child is dying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the scene to a much less like traumatic degree doesn't feel like it fits for me because it feels like two television characters who have just met and revealed to be child and father talking to each other. And I know that the show doesn't want to go any deeper than that, but at a certain point you start hitting these plot lines where you're deciding to do these very emotional storylines. And if you can't connect to it, it just feels like it's a thing that's put on top of everything else. So I like their interactions, but I don't buy them as a pair at this point.
Yeah, I feel like that's maybe a little unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like TV has existed for 70 some odd years with plots like this
running
through every show, and not every writing staff has someone with a dead kid on
no,
it.
No, and they've all been artificial attempts at creating plot, really.
Sure.
Like, and
sure.
It's not even a Star Trek metaphor where your creation of a plot is, here, let's bring in an alien group of aliens that are all homophobic or something, right? And we can write a story about that. It's an attempt to tell real human emotion in this plot.
Okay.
And it's not working.
Yeah, I would agree that I think that's what is different about this show versus previous Star Trek, where something like Picard finding out he has a son would be more baked into a Star Trek-y thing.
Yeah.
Or I think with it, at least with Riker's with Riker's story, it is baked into a Star Trek-y thing, even though kind of tangentially, because that Star Trek-y thing is not really doesn't really matter here. But I think that it worked better in that sense in the first season when you were dealing with this idea of the positronic brains and the possibility of curing this thing. Like there's more of a link to what the story is that they're telling. Whereas here, yes, it's just inside this thing, kind of disconnected from the Star Trek story they're telling, is Picard finds out he has a son.
Yeah. And I
mean, full stop.
Riker is a good example of it too, because I think that Riker as a character is better set up to tell the story of his dead son. And so mm-hmm. like, cause he has that family in the story, you know, like he, it's more like what he says carries a little bit more weight to me because he is not completely being thrown into a situation that he's just been exposed to and is expected to react to it. Like he's a character mm-hmm. who's carried this weight with him for a while. He has a family. He has another child. Like he has sort of things to bounce it off of and to like help with his understanding of what the situation is. And it gives him a chance to talk about things because he can compare his feelings as a character based on everything that we know about him. And I feel that Picard, the thing that I would have thought was interesting to focus on Picard is the well, it's tough because I feel like so much of Picard is just saying that Picard's life was empty in this season, and I don't feel like that's the case either. But I guess that's the place that I would have gone with it, which they have touched on here. But I don't know. It's just kind of weird that they are ending this character's run with a lot of like the regrets that he has over the course of his life. But who can say?
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Nothing else. I think we talked about every single scene in this
Pretty
this
much,
one
yeah.
episode, and we have unplugged our warp nacelles and we're moving on. And the next one is Imposter. So,
what's that about?
We'll see. It's public. The title was publicly revealed in no
probably
one's
an imposter.
I would assume it's about. Do we know her name? Vadek. I guess we do know her name. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I kind of, until you said next episode is called Imposter, kind of because I'm so conditioned by how these seasons work. Part of me in the back of my head was like, great season. They nailed it. Wrapped it up pretty good. Don't have to do anything else.
Nothing else. They're going to do their Star Trek sign off.
I guess the one thing that we didn't really mention is how do you feel about the lack of Raffi subplot in this one?
Oh,
I feel
it was like fine.
It only improved the episode.
Yeah, it's fine. I was thinking about how they're going to bring that, like, because she's carrying the mystery box weights, or she's carrying the water for that storyline. Mm. So, it's a success of the show that the mystery box is not the only thing that everyone's talking about.
Yes.
Here, you know,
I mean. Technically, there's two, right? Because there's the Raffi thing, but then there's also the fucking apocalyptic visions that Jack has had.
Oh, but it's all connected, right? That's what I guess thinking of. Yeah, and maybe not the characters shouldn't be thinking about it this way, but I'm assuming it's all connected.
Yeah, I am so done with apocalyptic visions. It's just, it seems so hacky to me.
Any guess about what
Star
this is?
Trek, in Star Trek specifically, it's like, I don't want to see this shit anymore. Yeah.
it's because it's doing so well outside of it. You know, it's like
right.
a small ship
thing.
To ship contained story.
It's like it's one of the big things that anchors it. And I mean that in the way that there's a big heavy weight dragging you down.
Yeah.
The thing that anchors it in the previous seasons of this show and in the worst seasons of like Discovery is this abstract mystery box thing that just it's just like I don't fucking care. Like the answer's not going to be fun. I'm not going to enjoy it when you get to the end and go like, oh wow, that was definitely worth it. You know, it's just because everything else I hesitate to say vibrant, but it feels more alive.
Yes, yeah.
Than this apocalyptic bullshit.
Did the Red Letter Media video have any guesses about what this is? What's going on?
No, I don't think so. I don't even think they really mentioned it.
Okay. I don't think there's enough information for me to guess. I was trying to think about what's going on, but it's
something
really
red.
Something red, and it makes him.
Because it's the only color that exists in Star Trek for some reason.
Was Jack shivering? Am I remembering the end of this right?
He was freaking out. It seemed like there was a female voice who was calling to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Jack Picard's son?
I was wondering that too, if maybe there's another twist coming there.
Is he a changeling?
Oh. Like with his memories been wiped or something? That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Were you just the one bringing up that like maybe the changelings are able to control people now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe it's the Great Link calling to him.
Yeah. Is that the female changeling's voice?
Might be.
Hmm.
That would be...
It can't not be his son, though.
I feel like they can't pull that rug out from underneath him.
I don't know. But it is certainly going to be less interesting than whatever else is. Do we have, and sorry, I don't know if I'm just not remembering, do we have any indication of what's going on in the next episode where they go?
I have no idea. Okay. I don't know if any clips have come out or anything.
There's no teasers after the episode, interestingly. Mm. All right. Well, I guess we're done. We'll see what happens next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting us on patreon.com. where you are listening right now, and maybe if it's a year later, you're listening on the regular feed, but this is all because of patreon.com/thePenskeyFile. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
No, keep checking out the shows. Rotten Heart Picture Show is doing some video nasties this year. Ooh, there is a clip. Whoa, that was loud. Sorry. you listeners couldn't hear it, but it was very loud to me. It's a clip of Worf and Raffi having a sparring session.
Yeah. Where's Geordi? The fuck is Geordi doing? Are you scrubbing through the video right now?
I am. Incoming encrypted message. It's a bunch of Raffi and Worf stuff. They try to make a call to Daystrom Station and it's denied. So
okay. Yeah, we still have Moriarty. I mean, we're only halfway into the season, I suppose, but they got to pull all that stuff out of their hat. So yeah, they go to Daystrom. They get the tech. They have to figure out what was stolen. All right. Well, whatever. We'll see what it is next week with Imposter. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you then.